You are listening to On the Shoulders of Dwarves, a weekly podcast about role-playing games and role-playing gamers.
On the Shoulders of Dwarves.
Hello and welcome to On the Shoulders of Dwarves, a weekly podcast about role-playing games and the people who play them. My name is Eran Aviram.
And my name is Uri Lifshitz.
And I'm Aviv Manoach.
And woohoo! Today all three of us have gathered because we are speaking about something that all three of us have some experience with, but Aviv most of all, streaming role-playing games. The point of this episode is not to explain to you how to stream, nor is it an introduction to streaming. We sort of want to discuss the topic. There are many, many different interesting things to say about role-playing games once you start streaming them. And there are many things that you might not have considered if you've never been part of this sort of operation, or even if you have. So if you want to know a bit more about the world in general of role-playing games, and streaming is a huge part of it these days, here are some things you might want to talk about. But first, a disclaimer from Aviv.
Yes. I work as a community manager at a company called Stream Elements. We are one of the major service and tools provider for live streamers. So some of the things I'm going to say are going to be directly related to tools we provide, but you can do them without it. So that's that.
So let us begin. Aviv, how about you guide this conversation? Where should we start when we talk about role-playing games once you put them on a computer and push them into the world?
Yeah, so there are two prominent types of those kinds of streams. The one are groups sitting around the table in their home or another space, filming themselves like they would a normal game. You sit with your friend around the table, you just have a camera recording you, streaming it live to the internet. The other kind of live streaming for role-playing games are conference streaming, meaning people are connected via a conferencing system, each with his own computer, and then we put together all of those feeds to a single game stream.
We should note that all three of us have some experience with this sort of streaming because we ran, I think, maybe 4 game marathons, something along those lines in the past like 4 or 5 years, using this sort of thing where we had people from all over the world at the same time on screen playing a game ran by one of us. And we also, well, say we, I mean Aviv, also produced it behind the screens. So he's the guy that actually sat down and created everything and worked out all the technical details to make sure that it works.
Indeed, and that's pretty much the only way if you are geographically dispersed.
Aviv, what sort of technical details do people will probably not think about when they think about streaming, but they really should?
You have your camera and the microphone that records what you're saying, and then you need a computer with a program on it that knows how to talk to one of the streaming platforms. You can stream to Twitch, which is the most popular, but also to YouTube and some other places. You can also just stream to your Facebook if that's the type of thing you want to do. Yeah, but it's a possibility. The most popular program to do this with is called OBS. You can download it freely. It's open source. And the basic of doing this are not that complicated. You just need an account on Twitch. You put your account details in the program and then you add a camera feed and it record. But when it comes to streaming conferencing game, it gets a little bit complicated because if you want it to look nice and not just be a Skype screen on your video, which you can do if you are not technically inclined and design inclined, you can just use your Skype as is or something. You will need to have what is called an overlay. An overlay is a screen, a graphic asset that covers the part of the screen that are not used for the video and puts nice information on them. And we'll probably have some example of this in the comments, like the game we ran not too long ago of the world, where each of us was in a little window that looked like a Polaroid picture, and we have our character's name on it and our Twitter handle on it. And there were also some interactive features like the stream chat on screen, and we were raising money for Make-A-Wish, so the donation goal was on screen and stuff like that. And you can do a lot of cool things if you want to go the extra mile with it.
This may sound a bit complicated, and it can be if you want to go very far with it and add, for example, a window that shows roll 20 for the dice rolls, because now you need to also have a tab open with roll 20. And once you open OBS, you might need to have two screens for OBS to capture a specific tab and also the Skype, etc., etc. The more things that you want to add, the more things become complicated. But it's still easier than having the other kind of stream where everyone is around the table. Because for that to look good, you need three cameras at least. One at the GM, one at some of the players, one at other of the players. Unless there are only like three players.
Preferably something that catch the table, to catch dice rolls if you can, and someone to shift between them and edit on the fly.
Exactly. The producer would need to shift between them and quite probably also present character sheets because, well, the standards are so high these days that it's common for these sort of streams to show character sheets during play, but it's not expected in the other kind of game, when you're conference game, because...
Yeah, but let's not scare people away from this, because at the very basic level, you don't need a lot. You will work on it maybe half an hour to an hour at the beginning, and you will catch how to do it, and you can just add things later. You don't need to have all those things from the beginning. I also want to say that for the example of using a local space with multiple camera, check out virtually every one of Appyjack's live role-playing game. Mm. They have a camera for each side of the table, a camera for the GM, and a camera on the dice tray, and their all studio setup is very nice.
We'll give a link to Happy Jacks, obviously, in the show notes. So are there any specific cool things that you can do with audience involvement, which is like interactivity? The main thing that makes a stream vastly different from a regular game?
Yeah, so the obvious thing is the chat. Each one of the streaming platform has the chat, and people come in and talk with each other and talk with you as the producers and participant in the game. And you can decide if you want to get questions from the audience or see if they need clarification on some rule or stuff like that. So that you can do without anything. They have the chat open, you have the chat open, you just read what's going on. But of course, you can do more. And one of the things we did in our gaming marathons where we raised money for charity is have people donate to get specific perks in the game. Mm-hmm. Now, when we did the world, it was asking questions and making the character's life more complicated. But when we did the Emerald Spire and Reapers, we actually had two groups, the party, the player characters, and the enemy, which in Emerald Spire was the dungeon, and in Reapers was the monsters, and people could donate to...
either side.
Yeah, they could donate to either side, either to help the players or make the opposition greater. And one of the cool things was that some people, including myself, when I ran that, were really vocal about helping the dungeon and the monsters against the party, and... it's a really cool thing to interact with the audience, and they really get into it.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Aviv, by the way. Thanks a lot.
So we'll talk a bit more about the community later, but first I want to talk about the thing that I found was the most important and unusual when I came to run a game in this sort of scheme, and that was the need for me as a GM to be an entertainer, not just for my group, but for everyone, for the public. And for you, Uri, as the player in that game, to be an entertainer, not just for your fellow players and me, but for everybody. And that's weird. It required us to go around and make sure that the players that we choose for the marathon were aware that this is entertainer first game. You needed to be funny, interesting, make sure that there's a reason to look at you, to watch you, way before you think about the story or your character or immersion or fun. I mean, they're all important in being entertaining, but the goal is being entertaining, unlike your usual game where you don't care about anyone else in the world, just around the people around your table, and that's enough, and you just need to have fun with each other, and that's usually everything. You don't need anything else.
It's not even that you need to entertain the audience. It's also the little things. You need to be aware that there's a camera on you and people are watching it. And for example, I have the unfortunate habit that when I am trying to think about something, I lower my head and look down. And when there is a camera on me, a lot of time people see my head down, and that's not a good experience for the audience. Mm. So we need to think about that.
Yeah, I think I was very lucky in that perspective because I am a trained improv actor, so I'm used to being entertaining while thinking quickly on my feet and to be aware that other people are watching me even though I need to concentrate and act. And on the other hand, I've also acted in films, meaning I have an understanding of how the camera works and how to behave in front of one. So in that case, I felt at ease, but it is a lot of things that you have to bear in mind. And when we say players as entertainers, we don't just mean the players. The GM have to act out the scene in a way that is not only understood by the players around the table, but for the audience as well. That is very different in terms of how do you focus your attention as a GM and what do you bring to the front of the stage.
Yes, and in order to be inclusive and give a warm feeling to those watching us, we also couldn't have any inside jokes. Any inside joke would have to be created during the stream. We couldn't bring anything from before the game, anything that we knew from our own group, anything that we've already established. We had to establish everything on screen. And that's fine. That's cool. That's great. It creates an excellent experience for us as well. It's just something that you have to be aware of. It's just like how with the game, it's entertaining, yes, but in order to be entertaining, we all need to have fun. So it's just like a normal game, but there's another thing that you need to be aware of.
Other than the issue of the interaction with the players and the audience, you also need not to take for granted the game system. It's likely that your audience wouldn't be familiar with the system as well as the players in your game, so there needs to be some emphasis of explaining rules and illustrating what you are actually doing with the system and not only with the story.
Good point. Even if you're playing something very common like Pathfinder or D&D 5th edition, it would still be different regarding house rules, regarding shortcuts and abbreviations that you may use at your table, which are not common knowledge for people watching you at home.
Let's talk a bit about the kind of streams that currently exist, because they are very different from each other in the way that they... Well, in everything, actually. I think the biggest difference between a channel, where you can find many different games with many different players running many different styles, things like a saving throw, or even the D&D channel, they just have many D&D games, but there are many different games of D&D. Or a channel where you only see a specific group playing a specific thing, which is not all that different from actual play podcasts. And I'm talking about Critical Role, mostly. But not only them. There are other channels where there's only a single thing currently going on. And that's what you're watching. That's what you're here for. And I think that the difference here is, correct me, Aviv, if I'm wrong, mostly about marketing? I mean, is it mostly about the way that you present yourself to your audience than it is about any other decision?
The channels that have multiple games also tend to have games that are shorter. If I'm thinking about Happy Jacks and some of Roleplay, a lot of their campaigns are more time limited. They usually don't last for years. Most of Apigeac's campaigns, for example, last for 8 to 12 sessions, maybe. And then they move on to new things. That was also the case with Roleplay until Court of Sword, which became the longest running campaign they are doing, but most of their campaign were a lot shorter.
Correct me if I'm wrong, the main thing that people, the audience, is attracted to is the personas of the people who are on the screen. That is, if I watch Critical Role, I can say it about them myself. When I watch Critical Role, I don't do it for the story. I've watched every episode to date, and I can't tell you what is going on. Nor do I really care. I don't think it's very interesting, and I'm not interested in making it interesting. I will not go to the wiki and read about it. It does not matter. I'm there for the funny, interesting, cool people that I know, and I want to see them play in whatever it is that they're currently doing. The connection, the overarching plots just don't really mean much to me. Maybe the personal plots mean something. And I think it's quite the same thing in the other kind of games, like, for example, in Happy Jacks. I think that if I would come to the next Happy Jack game, if I would start watching it, it will probably be because of two things. First, the premise of the game sounds interesting. Happy Jacks like to try all sorts of various interesting things. Or two, I like the people and I want to see them again playing something new this time.
As a generalization, I don't think that's true, and I think we go back to players' motivation about this, and there is the same kind of theory in communication about why you watch certain type of content, and some of them is for the social experience of and knowing the people participating in it, and others are, for example, gaining knowledge. Happy Jacks, I first look at what system they are playing, then I decide if I want to watch it. I watch their Monster Hearts and I watch their Mask, a new generation playthrough and stuff like that. And there are some systems that I'm not interested in or that I know that I won't like because of the way they run it. For example, I don't like Stu's GM style.
Okay.
So I don't watch those type of things. But on the other end, for roleplay, I will often catch roleplay show because of the people involved in them, and then I will be introduced to new people, and then I will watch more shows with those people, etc. I think roleplay campaigns are a lot more personality driven. I think that's because those are these type of people. They are live streamers. All they do is personality based.
Yes.
Unlike channels that are roleplay first, that those people came there to be role players and they develop themselves as entertainers later.
Yes, agreed. This also brings me to my next point, which is the difference between channels where you can have, which is between channels where you can see a lot of pre-prep, a game that is prepared before to be an overarching story, etc., etc., like, again, Critical Role, but also Dimension 20, where Brendan Lee Manigan works so hard on the story that they have miniatures and whole battle scenes created especially for the game even before it begins. So everything will need to go not exactly along rails, especially if you see the game, you can see that there are hardly any rails, and yet everything happens and must happen according to some pre-planned game.
At least one of the contingencies, yes.
Exactly. And that versus what you just say, roleplay. Roleplay, most of their games are not pre-planned. They just come along and let us begin and let's go and do some stuff. And it's very, very much character driven. And you watch it, as you watch it, you see the game created before your eyes with a lot of discussion between the player characters. It's not as if there isn't a lot of discussion between player characters in Dimension 20 or in Critical Role, because there is a lot. But
It's a question of focus.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and that's actually one of the things that drew me for Court of Sword, for example, in roleplay by GM'd by Adam Coble, and that they had guest players all the time. They play D&D 5th edition, and at the first, I don't know, 50 episodes, the character tended to die a lot. So they had a lot of guest characters, and the plot just developed organically from those people. And even for the Far Verona campaign that Adam runs, which is a sci-fi Stars Without Number campaign, there was some pre-prep for the beginning, but Adam basically only do prep for every other session or for at the beginning of the adventure and let things develop as they may. And one of the cool things about that, and related specifically to streaming, is that around Far Verona grew a big community of viewers that are also part of the Patreon, and they help Adam run the faction turns of the Stars Without Number game. So the players are playing a game that is affected at the macro level by the audience watching them, and that's cool.
That brings me directly to my final point that interests me, and that's the community itself, because that's more than anything, I think, something that people just tend not to think about. I think that most role players these days are streamers. That is, not streamers themselves, but part of the streaming community. They are somewhere along the lines of watching something, having watched something, or interested in watching something. And many, many of them started playing after first watching something. And it's quite obviously, and I say so because it's been said by so many articles and magazines, etc., that this is the main driving force of the popularity of role-playing games these days. So, first of all, I think that the main thing that I find cool about the community around streamers is how many new GMs come out of this. It's really weird, but I see so many people, not people that I personally know, although maybe one or two as well, but people on Twitter that are retweeted or stuff like that, that say, I'm going to run my first game after seeing this and this, after watching that person playing that thing. I got inspired. I want to do the same thing. I want to be a game master. And that's something that, as a person who grew up in the 90s, where being a game master was super rare and
yeah,
and considered hard and a skill that you needed to work hard to achieve the greatness of being a GM. Ooh, wow, yes.
I think that's also true still with our offline communities here in Israel, where we talked so much about helping people GM and encouraging them to GM, and it's still akin to a mythical status. And it was always so weird to me, because I got into roleplay when I was 13, and basically few months later I got into a convention and I started GMing, because if I wouldn't have done that, I couldn't have played the game. So I'm glad people are more inclined to GM nowadays.
It's a sad truth that many GM have GMianship thrust upon them. That's why I started GMing, because we didn't have a GM, and if I wouldn't do that, then there wouldn't be a game. But yeah. I think nowadays there's a few things that make it easier. Number one, as you've said, watching a live stream of someone playing and someone GMing give you a big sense of what is expected of you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And the buy-in is very, very easy.
Yes.
You can simply go online, watch a few live streams, and gain some experience. While in the past, you can only gain experience from playing or from GMing. And both of these were more time-consuming and require you to actually do the logistics of setting up a game or joining a gaming group. Now it's something you can do at home. Okay, I got a spare hour at night. I could just watch this live stream, get some inspiration, and then, oh, wow, I want to do this. Now I have to do whatever I need to do in order to play, be it via the internet or with people around the table.
I think it's the inspiration part that's the most important in my eyes, because, yes, people watch it and say, I like these characters, I like this story, I would love to create something like this. And the next step is, okay, then I will do so. Okay, then I'll be a GM. I'll create the story. And people, of course, really connect with role-playing games. You connect with your character on around your table, but people really connect also with the streams that they see. And the characters that are portrayed today, there's so much fan art on the internet, obviously for Critical Role, but beyond that, for any stream you can imagine, there's probably a lot of fan art, which is, I remind you, people that sat down and spent a lot of time and effort to create art just to share it and show how excited and happy they are with whatever it is, how engaged they are with whatever it is that is happening on the screen, because they want the rest of the community to see it and they want to be acknowledged. And that led on to the creation of custom art, where people will buy art of specific characters or specific scenes and pay money for it. And that led to the creation of a whole market with many RPG accessories, like dice that are also earrings. And, well, there's now edible dice as well. And you can buy on Etsy a lot of different stickers and crocheted D20s and whatever. And the reason you can do all of this is because geeks want to express their commitment, their engagement, and they love to support each other in the community. And all of these people are doing their own small things. Etsy is not for big, giant corporations. And when you pay someone on Twitter to buy fan art form, that's just another creator. That's just another dude from your community. And it's a big market. A lot of money is changing hands around all of these streams, not just with the streamers, not just with channels like Dropout, where you need to pay them if you want to watch Dimension 20, or Critical Role, where you need to pay them if you want to watch the game when it is being broadcasted, etc. You pay each other.
The kind of games you pay to watch are not the majority, thankfully, but a lot of those streaming games do have things like Patreons, and some of them make so much money from community donation. It's not a live stream, but I recently started listening to Friends at the Table, and then I went to the Patreon. They make like $30,000 a month from their audience.
Yes.
That's mind-blowing. And also on the community front, beside the art and stuff, there are also wikis of people documenting every little detail of those games, and that's amazing. The Friend at the Table campaign I just finished listening to is called Counterweight, and it's a very cool sci-fi campaign. And it has its own wiki with the fan art in it alongside all the details and stuff like that. It's amazing.
Woof. Good luck to them.
So this is it. In summary, do we have anything else we want to add?
Don't be afraid. It's easy. It's a bit technical, but you can just pop me on Twitter and I will help you set it up if you want to.
I would like to say exactly the opposite. Be afraid. It's not easy. Being good is hard. Doing this in a way that is exciting and manages to actually make people engage with you is hard. And it's very easy to build up hopes that your charismatic personality will be enough, but it's not. It doesn't really matter how charismatic you are, unless you're Beyonce, and then that's fine.
I'll try and find a median path between the both of you. Don't be afraid to start. It's not hard to start. And the effort required to get a decent product out there, a decent game with a great experience, is not that difficult. Having said that, if you want to climb to the top, that requires a lot of investment. And you should definitely consult a professional before trying that at home, i.e. talk with Aviv.
Don't try to rise to the top. There is nothing important there. Just start, have fun, and that's it.
Agreed, that's the best reason to start anything. Start small, enjoy the experience, and, you know, if it's fun, it will evolve on its own.
And now it's time to take the load off.
This world is carried on the shoulders of the war.
This is the part of the show in which we talk a bit about role-playing games in our own personal lives, but now we have so many different interesting things to tell you about. First, I would suggest that if you downloaded the previous episode and it was weird, re-download it. because the first draft that was published was had some problems with it, and then we uploaded the new one. But it could be that your podcatcher downloaded the first version, and you say, what is this weird thing? Re-downloaded it, it should work now, and it's an excellent episode, so you should really listen to it.
Indeed. I will elaborate on that. Apparently, unbeknownst to our listeners, a few weeks ago, I started editing the episode instead of Eran. This has led to a multitude of bad things to happen. But one good thing happened, and that Eran have more free time to do more interesting stuff right now. And I am learning a new life skill. Yay! So expect the unexpected in future episodes, be they intentional or not. I apologize in advance, but hopefully really, really soon we could go back to the same high level of quality, sound quality, and editing quality that you have grown to expect from this podcast. I have also been abroad. I flew to merry old England, where Eran lived, to meet Eran. Hi, Eran.
Hello.
It's me, Uri.
Hey.
And we spent an entire day together at Dragon Meet, which is UK largest role-playing convention. It was absolutely incredible, and I think everyone should go to a roleplay convention in a country other than their own. It's really interesting to note how many biases you have toward role-playing conventions until you go to a convention in another country. This isn't my first time in a convention in a different country, but every time I go to a convention in a different country, it amazes me how many things I take for granted that are not necessarily so. And Dragon Meet was an amazing experience. And because a whole day of role-playing convention wasn't enough, the day after that, we did our own little convention with an excellent adventure that Eran ran and a whole lot of board game to fill up the rest of the day. And that has been an awesome weekend in the role-playing front.
Continuing from your point, the game that I ran to you while you were here, it's a hard game called Exotic Ingredients. It's the only adventure that I haven't yet published. And that's because it's a really weird adventure. That's not about succeeding, it's about pacing. And that's a thing that I'm not really sure how to explain to the GM who is reading the adventure. I don't want to spoil too much, but the adventure, it does not feel the same way on both sides of the GM screen. For the GM, it's a tricky sort of thing how to make sure that the players get to play through every cool thing that they can, while for the players, they just choose what to do and everything is straightforward and everything is fine. It's a con adventure, so you have to do it in 4 hours. I have no idea how to explain this, but I was encouraged by a person who managed to run it on their own during Dragon Meet. They told me that it works, so I will try to make it work and publish it. We'll see what happens.
Definitely. I think it's basically a very comical adventure.
Oh, yes, yes.
And I think there aren't enough comical adventure in role-playing as a general.
That's true.
And I'm going to pick up that gauntlet and see if I can do something about that.
Aviv, what about you?
Uri, you have too much gauntlets. You need to put a few down. On my front, beside the multitude of role-playing games I play, which really, it's a personal golden age for me, I started a new podcast. It's called The Burn. And in it, we talk about gaming, one game. So far, it was only video games, but in the future, who knows? And then one news topic relevant to the time of the episode, when the episode goes live. The second episode just dropped yesterday, and it's going to be on every other week, so you can catch it on dburn.live, where you can subscribe to every app you use to listen to podcasts. And beside that, I know that Eran already mentioned it in a previous episode, but lately I created a modified version of John Harper's Laser and Feelings called Aces in Mechs, in which you play kind of war drama, war story, where you pilot mechs and trying to broker peace between warring factions, because that's one of my favorite things to play in ever.
Woohoo!
Excellent. And with that, we are getting ready to finish. But if you want to send us an email, do so at show@dwarfcast.net. And you can find us all over the internet. That is specifically Twitter and Facebook, and also at dwarfcast.net. If you have any thought about something that we should do, email us. But also if you have any question about something that you should do, email us, because we reply to everything, anything. And now, as always,
Leitraot!
On the Shoulders of Dwarves is shared under Creative Commons by attribution non-commercial 4. Intro and outro are by The Cliché Dio, and you can email us at show@dwarfcast.net.
On the Shoulders of Dwarves.
So, Ran, what exactly is Venture 4?
Venture 4th is a card-based storytelling game that I designed, where you get to play an entire campaign of a fantasy-like, generic, classic role-playing game in about 3 hours. It is also available as an app through Google Play Store.
Cool! If you want to grab a copy of Venture 4th, go to DriveThruRPG or to the Google Play Store.